Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the What You Got to Lose talk show, where knowledge is power and accurate knowledge is revolutionary. I'm your host, Sherwood A. Grant, holistic personal trainer, and we'll be talking about food once again for the rest of the month. Let thy food be thy medicine, and thy medicine be thy food. That's a quote from Hippocrates, almost 3,000 years ago. What does that mean to you? Talk to me. You can give me a call at 646-200-0948 to share your comments, if you have any questions, any thoughts. Like I say, the first question I would love to get answers to is just, what does that mean to you? What does let thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine be thy food? I find that to be a very interesting topic, only because this has been around for thousands of years, this adage, but it seems that the medical industry have not utilized such a wise thought to treat people, to educate people, to help people reach a higher level of consciousness. You got to ask yourself why. Why are our medical industries not providing the information or information that can actually help individuals transform their lives? Well, you know, I was looking around for some information to share, and I came across an article from a doctor that said that the fundamental reasons why doctors do not know much about nutrition is because very few of them study much, if not anything, about nutrition in medical school. This is largely because the curriculum is heavily influenced by the food and drug industries. Ray D. Strand, MD, the author of Death by Prescription, punctuates the lack of education about nutrition by saying, "In medical school, I had not received any significant instruction on the subject. I was not alone. Only approximately 6% of the graduating physicians in the United States have any training in nutrition. Medical students may take elective course on the topic, but few actually do. The education of most physicians is disease-oriented with a heavy emphasis on pharmaceuticals. We learn about drugs and why and when to use them." Now, Dr. Strand also observed that doctors usually make good teachers but not good students, and that most doctors fear not knowing the answers to medically related issues and will try to present themselves with as much authority as possible. Dietary supplements are a very foreign subjects to most doctors, and most doctors show no interest in learning more about them. He says that the doctors are not taught much in medical school about the power of nutrients or nutrition in medicine, only about the power of prescription drugs and surgery as treatment for disease. He also agrees that with our observations, at least of from this article, that the focus of a medical education is on treatment and not on provision. According to Dr. Strand, it is this mindset that causes most physicians to be unreceptive to new ideas in medicine. Dr. Strand explains that the effects of his medical education head on him for the first 23 years of his medical practice by saying, "To be honest, I knew nothing about nutrition or nutritional supplementation. Because of the respect people have for doctors, they assume we are experts on all health-related issues, including nutrition and vitamins. Before my conversion experience with nutritional medicine, my patients frequently ask me if I believe their taking vitamins produce any health benefits. Handing the bottles back, I'd say that the stuff was absolutely no use at all. What I did not share with my patients was that I had not spent a minute evaluating the hundreds of scientifically conducted studies that prove the value of supplementation to health. For the first 23 years of my clinical practice, I simply did not believe in nutritional supplements. During the past 7 years, however, I have reconsidered my position based on recent studies published in the medical literature. What I found is so astounding, I have changed the course of my medical practice. Physicians seem to contend to allow pharmaceutical companies to determine their therapies as they develop new drugs. Physicians are simply too busy treating disease to worry about educating their patients and healthy lifestyles that helps avoid developing degenerative diseases in the first place. As I have applied these principles in treating my patients, the results have been nothing short of amazing." Those are some pretty powerful statements by Dr. Strand. And I find it to be common knowledge in personal experiences of others that this is true. Even though medicine has been around for ancients of times, we have not really elevated our ability to find cures, to heal as a whole. I continued to do some more research, and I looked up the history of medicine. I'm going to share what I found. It says that all human societies have medical benefits that provide explanations for birth, death, and disease. Throughout history, illness has been attributed to witchcraft, demons, astral influence, or the will of the gods. These ideas still retain some power, with faith healings and shrines still in some places, although the rise of scientific medicines over the past millennium has altered or replaced mysticisms in most cases. The ancient Egyptians had a system of medicine that was very advanced for its time and influenced later medical traditions. The Egyptians and the Babylonians both introduced the concept of diagnosis, prognosis, medical examinations. The Hippocratic Oath, still taken by doctors today, was written in Greece in the 5th century BCE. In the medieval era, surgical practices inherited from the ancient masters were improved and then systemized. In Rogerius's The Practice of Surgery. So during the Renaissance, understanding of anatomy improved, and the invention of the microscope would later lead to the germ theory of disease. These advancements, along with developments in chemistry, genetics, and lab technologies such as X-ray, led to modern medicine. So when we think about the origin of medicine, we find that there is a lot of history with the ancient practices of healers. And it seemed to be that Egypt, no doubt, is one of the most, I guess they have really implemented the medical tradition. The ancient Egypt developed a large varied and fruitful medical tradition. There is a quote by Herodotus described the Egyptian as the healthiest of all men next to the Libyans, Libyans at least, due to the dry climate and notable public health system that they possessed. And according to him, the practice of medicine is so specialized among them, the Egyptians, that each physician is a healer of one disease and no more. Now, although Egyptian medicine, to a good content, a good extent at least, dealt with the supernatural, it eventually developed a practical use in the field of autonomy, public health, and clinical diagnosis. Interesting. Now, of course, there were many other origins of medical healings, I guess I probably want to talk or mention about the other nations that added to healing in our societies, like the Babylonians. We have India, who have we have the China, the Taoist. We have the Shumanak. Let's see, there's quite a few actually. I mean, with the Greek and the Romans. There's a lot of history when it comes down to the origin of healing. But why are not the modern day practices making use of all of these traditions of healing? Because back in the day, there were diseases and man did look to nature to find cures. This day and age, we have a lot of diseases, and so many are said to not have any type of cures. Why? Is it profitable not to cure disease? Is it not inhumane to not cure disease? When we talk about food, or at least when I talk about food, I always make mention of it in a way that it can be the source of healing of all issues of mankind. As I've spoken of in my past talk shows, is that man was afflicted with the lack of ability to make use of healthy foods to cripple his growth as a godlike individual. So God knew that if he changed man's food, it would make him less godlike. It's pretty systematic or logical for man to conclude the same thing. If I can make man food has a less vibration and provide a less resource to humans, if I can change the food that humankind eat, then I can definitely once again weaken his godlike spirit. And now you have some diabolical systems that put a structure in place to profit. So to be sick, there is a lot of profit. You know, if I can create disease and then come up with a Band-Aid, if I can come up with a a temporary fix, then I can turn around and sell these band-aids or temporary fix. Henceforth, our pharmaceutical sales companies, our drugs, everyone want to pop a pill. Everyone wants to heal real quick. No one wants to really look at our food sources. Too often, as Americans, we want to just utilize these pills for our high blood pressure or other ailments without giving our bodies a chance to correct the issue through proper diet and exercise. Yeah, we may try to eat a little better and by eating, chicken or pasta instead of steak or potatoes, but that is through our own ignorance or arrogance, I would say, and what we have been taught, that we make choices as such. What we need to do is to get more serious about our health and what we are eating and eat to live. And help our bodies to overcome many of the common ailments that afflict our population because of our dietary ignorance and lack of self-discipline. We are simply overfed and undernourished. And this can easily be proven if you just pay attention to the general public. We see sickly, obese people, and people do not have to be obese to be sickly. But you can see this in the malls, in the airports, in the stores, that people get plenty of food, but not enough nutrients. This is through the lack of education and a lack of self-discipline to eat correctly. Henceforth, one of the reasons why I am presenting information as such, because I find that most people really have no idea about eating healthy or about making wise choices. Why so? Well, I think that's because it's not beneficial for individuals to really, if a person sat down and really, really looked at the choices that they made, there has to be some sort of accountability. And sometimes we are not ready to look ourselves in the mirror. But there's also the issue of many of myths and many of socialized ideas that are out there that causes a lot of confusion. Sifting through a lot of this causes major issues psychologically. You don't know who to trust. You don't know who to believe. You find that you get confused about the basics about eating properly and exercise. It really can be a challenge because society has done a great job in, I guess, providing a smokescreen as to what healthy eating looks like, to know what real food tastes like or smell like. But should we just continue to blame society? Should we put the onus on the medical industry? I mean, we all have been given the power of choice. That's one thing that no one can take away from us. We can choose to our death. We have choices that we can make. I was just sharing with one of my clients today that each and every day we have an opportunity to make a wise choice or not so wise choice. We have an opportunity to fulfill a purpose that we may outline for ourselves or a purpose that have been outlined for us. And each and every choice and decision that we make can aid that decision to be fruitful, or it can limit that your goals and purposes to take place. Let thy food be thy medicine, and thy medicine be thy food. You can keep that adage with you each and every day as you make choices, especially as you eat. It is imperative that we really embrace that you are what you eat. What you do right now can impede you in the future, no doubt. And that should be something that we shouldn't even have to debate about. Because if you look at your parents, those parents that grew up in the 50s and the 40s, and you look at their yearbooks, you don't find people that look sickly. You had a lot of healthy looking people. Most people at that time period did have heart disease or died of heart disease. That was probably the most common, and that was due to a lot of the lard, a lot of the fat that was in their diet, and a lot of the salt that were in their diet. They did have, once again, choice, but sometimes there was an overindulgence. So lard and fat definitely can affect individuals. But right now, we're faced with something totally different because the same food that they were eating back then are not the food that we are eating now. You know, you pick up an apple now and an apple back then, there's a distinct difference between the two. You pick up a peach, you know, 30 years ago, like I said, I can remember so vividly, you know, sucking the juice out of that seed compared to right now. You know, you have a peach, it just fall out the middle. It's dry in the middle. So knowing that food has definitely changed should be a stimulation to say, hey, you know what, I need to look seriously at the food choices that I make each and every day. Sometimes this may go against our nature to gravitate towards things that make us feel good or happy, so to speak, because that's what we generally do with food. We use food as a comfort. But if we have been limited to real food, if we have been limited to the varieties of different foods, if we've been limited to the ways to prepare food, that will allow us, or that will put us in that feel-good state, that would definitely satisfy any type of yearnings that we may have regarding food. How would we know what choices to make? I mean, if we have never been exposed to them, and even to this day, if you have never been exposed to them, how do you know that you're really missing out on what you're not doing? There are so many choices that you can make that will actually cause you to forget the pleasures that you are attached to today that you know that are not benefiting you. I don't understand that intelligent beings can make decisions that we know that if we consistently follow the process of eating fast foods or eating foods that are processed or eating canned good foods or eating fried foods, and not eating with balance, not eating live foods or foods that were given to man, if we know that it would give us diabetes, raise our cholesterol, give us high blood pressure issues, causes cancers, but yet and still continue to eat them, I can't understand that. To me, it's hard to fathom. Let me regress. I can understand how that a person can be caught up into such a routine. But I can't understand how that we can see so much sickness and death and not question the choices that we make. We can make improvements, very much so, even if they're small improvements. But I think most of us feel so challenged about making these changes. Most of us feel like we're going to be missing out on so much. I think I spoke to a lady just yesterday at an event that I was attending, and she's like, oh, I need to lose about 40 pounds, but I cannot. And let me repeat, she said, I cannot give up my potato chips and chocolate. So I said, well, who said you had to give it up? You first have to approach food in a way that it doesn't control you. You have to include a variety of foods to your diet, to your choices, to your toolbox. And if you have a variety of foods rotating, your body is going to tell you what it likes and what it doesn't like. It's going to tell you what it needs and what it doesn't need. Personally, I remember loving Louisiana Crunch Cakes. It was just my favorite sweet. And I would, you know, go to the outlet, you know, just to buy me one of those cakes a week. But when I decided in 1999 to make a transformation, and I participated in a contest of 12 weeks, I knew I had to let it go. I knew that eating that Louisiana Crunch Cake would not help me attain the goals that I was trying to achieve. And after those 12 weeks and finding other things to eat and really understanding the effect of food, I never desired it anymore. I don't know when the last time I ever had a piece. I remember at a point I had to buy one each and every time I was in the store. But at this point, it's not even something that I desire, because I know I have so many other foods that I enjoy that gives me a feel-good feeling, not just externally, but internally. Let thy food be thy medicine, and thy medicine be thy food. Let's take a quick break so I can regather my thoughts and share my answers to what does that mean to Sherwood Grant. Welcome back. I want to remind my online listeners to feel free to call in to share a thought or a question at 646-200-0948. Also, I want to remind you all to the Facebook users to like TalkWire Radio Network and my Facebook page, Simple and Good, Bridging the Gap Between Health and Fitness. And you also reach out to me via Facebook, Sherwood A. Grant, or LinkedIn, Twitter, and even my YouTube channel under Simple and Good. And I do have a very informative website at SherwoodAGrant.com. And if you have any questions that you would like for me to present, you can email me at talkwire@SherwoodAGrant.com. Let thy food be thy medicine, and thy medicine be thy food is the topic we are speaking on today. And I wanted to answer, what does that mean to me? What does that thought, that adage mean to me? Well, when I first heard that, it kind of gravitated to me. It was very strong because I feel that all diseases can be cured. I feel that everything on earth has a purpose, every disease, an herb to cure it, and every person, a mission. I feel that the food you eat can be either the safest and most powerful form of medicine or the slowest form of poison. I believe that your body's ability to heal is greater than anyone has permitted you to believe. I believe that if a man can leave this adage 3,000 years ago, that mankind could have surely capitalized off this wisdom and produced many cures that the body or that humankind can definitely utilize today. I also believe that even prior to Hippocrates sharing this, that we had Egyptian forerunners in the medical industry like Imhotep, who was considered to be the god of medicine, who was curing people of all types of diseases just using the herbs. And you had people traveling around the world to get taught from this ancient school system to be able to know how to be healers. I believe that letting thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine be thy food would mean that we would not need, when a diet is wrong, medicine is of no use. When a diet is correct, medicine is of no need. It is so important to really give that this a thought, this adage, let thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine be thy food, because this is something that we do each and every day. We eat each and every day. And if you're an American, you overeat for the most part, because that's what most Americans do, because we're not satisfied with the food that we eat because it doesn't have enough nutrients in it. And even the foods that you think or the foods that you know are healthy, because of the way they have been grown or because of they have been genetically modified, those foods sometimes do not have the nutrients that your body needs and desires. So then, therefore, you are left feeling empty inside. I think once we truly understand that the body is composed of 102, at least 102 minerals, that you'll find that our choices would differ, because you want to replenish those minerals. You want to replenish those herbs, or through herbs, you want to replenish a lot of the nutrients that the body needs in order just to function. You know, you have all these organs and systems that are designed in a particular way that it needs energy in order to operate. And it feeds off a certain type of energy. The last couple of weeks I've been sharing that God denoted what we should eat, or Mother Nature provided what we should eat to be able to have optimal systems. Sickness is not supposed to befall us if we make the right choices. And I can easily prove that because, once again, just looking at recent history, 30 years ago, how many people did you know had diabetes? How many people did you know of that have cancer? How many people did you know of that had heart disease? How many people did you know of that had breakouts all over their skin and the hair was falling out, and they had weird diseases that you couldn't even pronounce? But yet today, 2012, each and every one of you that is listening could probably name 10 people off the top of your head that you know have been afflicted with cancer, have diabetes, on high blood pressure, or have some sort of other ailment that was not present 30 years ago. What has changed? We supposed to be in modern day. We supposed to have advanced in a lot of different ways, and in many ways we have. But why are people dying at an alarming rate? Even though you have some people say that we are living longer. It's such an interesting topic. It looks like I have a caller. Let me take this call. Hello, 8174. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great.
Okay, I was listening a little bit. I haven't been on long, but I said I would try to chime in. My first name is Harold, and I know Kim because I'm a realtor and so forth, and we're on Facebook together. What is your first name? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
My name is Sherwood.
Sherwood, okay. How you doing, Sherwood?
I'm great. We talked about let thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine
right.
be thy food.
Right. And I agree with you on, I'd say, about 80% of what I've heard so far. There are some reasons why, and I'm not a doctor, so you don't have to worry about that. There are some reasons why some people do not get, we have more diseases now. Some of it is people are living longer. Some of it is the chemical medicine, and I always differentiate. Because there's a difference between what you can use in your body or you shouldn't use. And all chemical medicine has some type of side effect. But there's a number of people that have that use chemical medicine, and the advances have been better. So people are feeling like they're living longer, even though there's problems with their health. And if once they get treated by a doctor and it solves one thing, then they have some other type of problem because of the side effects. I'm going to give you a quick example.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was in my 20s, which I will say it was only a year ago. No, I'm just teasing. But it was quite a while ago. And I went to the doctor, and I had, which I found out later was heartburn. The doctors then didn't really study the medicine like it is now. And now you can even study yourself through the internet because you have a library on your phone and at home with your computer and so forth. So you can find out all types of things. But back then, you couldn't. And the doctor basically gave me Maalox, and he says, well, you try this, you try that. And then he was talking about surgery, and I told him right there, Doc, I will try anything, but you're not cutting out me.
Correct.
And I told him just like that, you are not going to have surgery on me. Had a friend who was a vegetarian. He gave me a book. I told him about the problem, and he probably saved my life. Okay. He did save my life from what he gave me, the information. I had to change my whole diet around. I'm not a vegetarian, but I eat 30 times better now than I did in my 20s. And we're talking 40 years, and we're talking about 40 years ago. So it gives you my age. I'm 63 now. And I feel better now than I did when I was in my 20s. I don't get heartburn. I know a lot about my body. I know what I can eat and what I can't eat. I refrain from certain types of foods. But every once in a while, like anybody else, I might splurge. If I splurge and I don't feel right, I know what to do about it. When I was in my 20s, I did not know. Drank a lot of coffee, drank a lot of pop. I was always tired. Things like that. And now I don't drink coffee. I don't need to have coffee to do anything. And even if I drank the cup, because I might stay up a little late, the caffeine doesn't bother me, things like that. So it's a matter of educating yourself. And once you educate yourself about what you need for your body to feel good, then things happen for the better. I'll put it like that. Exercise is another thing. So I'm not saying I exercise every day, but I will tell you this. I'm in better shape as far as exercising than most people my age or younger or older. I have a good friend that lives in Gary, Indiana. He's 78 years old. He's out at 5 in the morning walking 3 and 4 miles every day. Okay? And yet he has buddies that in order for them to get around, they have to have a walker.
Right.
Okay? They have to have a walker and things like that. I've lost 4 very good friends. And they've been dead for at least 15 years and beyond because of a heart attack, because they were smoking, and they had all types of problems with diet and things like that. So, I'm very much aware of what you need. And I would tell anybody
let me ask you
listening, they have to educate themselves. Yes, Sherwin.
Well, tell me, so you truly believe that food can be thy medicine and medicine can be thy food?
Oh, definitely. That's why I called in the program. I thought you had an interesting subject. I definitely think that. And I would say this to anybody. If you can stay away from chemical medicines, I believe you're going to live a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I was just about to make mention of as I was speaking about how that 30 years ago, not as many people had the same diseases that we are seeing today.
Right.
And the only difference is that 75,000 new chemicals have been introduced to the world. And these are chemicals that the body cannot metabolize. These are chemicals that the body considers to be poison because it cannot utilize. But yet and still is in your food, is in your products that you wash your clothes, is in the things that you put in your hair, is in all things in the air and the water. So it's so important to know that these chemicals is what's really causing our bodies to become sickly.
I can agree with that completely. And I will say to anyone that I think what you can't avoid the chemicals, but you can do whatever you can to not use them as much. I'll put it like that. Sometimes these doctors in the pharmaceutical industry has made billions and billions and billions of dollars. Everybody knows that. If there's a way that you can avoid using some type of medicine and use something that's more natural, it's going to be a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, for acid indigestion, heartburn, one of the best things is a natural fruit, and that's papaya. I've told people, if you can get papaya juice, especially if you can get it unsweetened, and if you have to have a little bit of something to sweeten it up, then mix it up with something. Papaya cuts the fats and oils that you might eat within, you know, whatever you eat, and that causes the backup. A lot of people think it's stress, but it's not only stress. It's usually just the acids in your body, and everybody has a different set of tolerance. I would say that's one of the big things. Another is looking at the types of foods, using more organic, eating more vegetables, using olive oil. I've been reading up on olive oil, which is very medicinal, especially if you use it in all types of foods.
And
it's more medicinal than I ever thought. For inside and outside. I've known people that have had, for example, hemorrhoids. That's all diet related. Almost everything that you might have, hemorrhoids, lack of sleep, problem sleeping, things like that. Generally, you can trace it back to diet.
Yes, I totally agree.
And if you can get that diet under control, where you eat more vegetables and more raw foods that are good for you, then you'll feel better and things will start happening in a positive direction for you.
Okay, and let me ask you this, Harold, since you're a mature man, why do you feel that many people, especially of that maturity, you know, the 50s and 60s, years of age,
right,
that they do
right
not want to make changes to their diet?
I think it's almost like drugs, but it's a little bit different, but it works the same way. It's addictive. Sugar is addictive for some people. Salt is addictive for other people. Fried foods. You know, there's some people that have to have a lot of meat because, you know, they think it makes them feel a certain way, in detriment to what their body can take. So it's a learned response too. And it triggers something in the brain that triggers something else that goes through your body and says, oh, this is great, this tastes great, and I feel a little good when I eat this. And then later on, they're real sluggish. I think they sometimes call it like the sugar high and the caffeine high that
right
people get. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's basically is a different form of addiction.
I agree.
So, mm-hmm.
I agree. Well, I really appreciate you calling.
Okay.
And giving input. Definitely feel free to call in the future. And if you get a chance, check out some of the other episodes if you have not in the past under What You Got to Lose on the TalkWire or Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, okay. And is that your particular station?
I'm with the TalkWire Radio Network, and the name of the show is What You Got to Lose. So I'm in early parts of producing this show, but I definitely want to get out a lot of information that I think people can find useful, but it's just not being talked about. No one's really talking about food on a personal level or talk about health on a personal
right
level. And there's a lot of myths out there. I know you said you agree with 80% of what I said. I want to get around to the 20% that you disagree with.
I'd rather
I'm going to let that alone this time.
We'll go, We'll have to do that at another show. But
right.
I don't want to. We're on a positive note. I want to keep it there.
No doubt. I appreciate it.
One of the things I wanted to do, wanted to tell you, though, a lot of men, especially African-American men, they don't, because one of the biggest things is prostate, where they have prostate problems and things like that. And I would say to them, they need to research. I've known so many guys that have gone through surgeries and things like that, and I'm happy to see there have been some commercials talking about salt pimento and talking about pumpkin seed.
Mm-hmm.
Salt pimento and pumpkin seed will slow down the situations that men might have with prostate. I will also say diet is the other thing with prostate. Because as a male gets, when they become 40 years old, the prostate starts changing. Okay, and then the older that they get, the more it changes. And I'm not sure if it gets. I think it gets larger, and doesn't cut off. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I can't give you everything about it, except to say that. If you change your diet, get off the fried foods, take salt pimento, pumpkin seed, that it will change your whole life with the prostate. Okay, and there has been research recently from New England Journal of Medicine, and that's another good source to look at,
mm-hmm.
Where they said that these doctors, especially American doctors, didn't even need to do surgery to deal with the prostate.
Great.
Okay. So
well, what I'm
that's
gonna
enough,
do,
that's a bit.
Yeah, I'm going to share some herbal foods that I have here. I got a nice little list of foods that have some natural healing properties that I think
good.
That people can find advantageous. So I think I got about 6 minutes, and I think I'm gonna start on that list now. So I really do appreciate you calling in, Harold.
Okay, well, I appreciate talking to you, and let's do it again. Thank you.
No problem. Have a good one.
And I'm going to continue to listen.
Yes, keep listening.
I sure will.
All right, so I thank Harold for sharing his testament, and I am going to share at this time some herbs because... herbs are food, and if you add them in your food, if you eat them, they definitely have some very powerful effects to the body because, as I made mention in my last show, certain foods gravitate to certain parts of the body. It's a reason why all foods are not the same color, not the same shapes, not the same texture. We have sweet, sour, pungent, salty. You know, there's reasons for this. We need to understand and break that code so that we can understand and have more of a relationship with our food so we can control, actually, where it gravitates towards, you know. Or we can make sure that we eat the foods that will gravitate to a particular problem, just like Carol made mention about the salt pimento being one that would help the prostate. So I'm going to share a little brief list. Cayenne pepper is used as an overall digestive aid. And it stimulates the production of the gastric juices, improves metabolisms, and helps relieve gas. Cayenne is also very nutritious. The peppers in it contains vitamin C, iron, calcium, phosphorus, and the B-complex vitamins. Ginseng, it helps strengthen the immune system and improves the digestive and respiratory functions, overcomes anemia and fatigue, and aids the body's ability to adapt to stress. It warms the body and helps strengthen people who are cold, pale, and weak. Ginger is a time-proven remedy for upset stomach, indigestions, and cramps. Ginger is a natural anti-inflammatory. Also, ginger is a treatment for arthritis. So people who eat lightly cooked fresh ginger supplement shows improvements in swelling, morning stiffness, pain, and joint mobility. Rosemary is a memory enhancer. It protects against free radical attacks, damage inflicted by free radicals, the leading causes of cancer, heart disease, degeneration, and premature aging. So rosemary can help promote longevity. We have thyme, which is also known as the strengthener of the lungs. You can use it as a gargle for sore throats, a disinfectant, and comforts the stomach. It can be inhaled or diffused for respiratory problems such as colds, sinus congestions, asthma, bronchitis, whooping cough, and spastic dry coughs. Sage is good for excessive perspiration, sore gums, and digestion. It helps with the uterine problems such as PMS, regulating scanty periods and easy cramps in the lower back area. It works during menopause to relieve hot flashes, dizziness, headaches, night sweats, palpitations, and irritability. What else I got? Oh, oregano. Oregano is known for its use with parasite conditions. It can help soothe the stomach, stimulate appetite, and stimulate sluggish digestive system. It is highly effective with chronic bronchitis, tickling cough, pulmonary tuberculosis, asthma, and the whooping cough. We have onions that can help with lowering the blood pressure and help prevent blood clots. Also a source of energy and prevents hair loss. Onions is rich in psyllium, a mineral that reduces the risk of prostate, lungs, and breast cancer. There are quite a few different herbs that we can use and ingest. The cinnamon, which is good for upset stomach, gas, and diarrhea. Parsley, which is good for good for digestion also, and relieves gas, helps with cough, asthma, and colds. It protects against cancer and helps clear congestion. We have basil, which reduces stomach cramps and nausea. It helps release gas also and promotes normal bowel functions and aids with digestion. Basil is also an effective remedy for vomiting. You have cloves, which are used for toothaches and to stop vomiting also. Cloves are useful in prevention of viral disease. Cloves is beneficial in rheumatoid arthritis and other musculoskeletal condition. Topically, it can be used for leg ulcers. I'm going to stop there. I got quite a few that I can share, and I received these from health stores. They usually have like a list of different herbs. So definitely take a visit to your nearest health store, get involved, educate yourself, and I definitely thank you for listening to the What You Got to Lose Talk Show. That is my time.